Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hey.
Hey.
It's me, Jesse Gaskell.
I'm Mike Sweeney, and welcome to Inside Conan.
An important Hollywood podcast.
See how we broke the title up there.
Yeah, we're really syncing up.
Talk about being in sync.
Our cycles are synced.
Yeah. Well, it's a different story.
So this week, we are on hiatus.
Right.
And yet you and I are still here.
Yes, here in Los Angeles. Oh,
well,
here in the studio. Here
working.
Recording a podcast. Here calling this work.
Here on Earth, right.
But hiatus, i.e. our show's dark for the week.
Yeah.
I.e. our people office
scatter.
Is closed.
The office is dark.
Right.
Except we actually have done some work because we're working on the travel show.
Yes,
too.
We're working on a travel show and still figuring out where we're going.
Yes.
I think we're going to announce that in a week or two.
Getting all the shots you might need to go anywhere.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm getting all the hepatitises.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
So A through C.
I think there's even more than that now.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm glad someone is hard at work trying to come up with
new
strains
hepatitis.
Of hepatitis.
Hepatitis?
If you come up with a hepatitis D, then you can also do the shots for it. And that's a moneymaker.
Oh, I know. That's right. Pitch it to Pfizer.
Makes sense. Good. You got your shots?
Yeah.
Good. And pills? You got pills?
I got the pills. I got all the pills.
Okay.
I'm just being vague because we haven't announced it yet.
No.
They could be birth control pills. I don't know. I don't know.
I didn't want to say it when you said pills, but I don't want to pry.
Gotta get prepped for the travel week.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I hope we go to Ohio. Just take it easy this time.
I would need birth control pills.
Yes, you would. Oh, the men of Ohio.
To get them.
They're irresistible.
We do have an interview banked from our delightful couple of days in New York.
Yes, with Allison Silverman.
Allison Silverman.
She was a writer in Late Night.
Yeah.
And she,
no relation to Sarah, right?
Because
a lot of people are related to Sarah.
I mean, is that true? Well,
I don't know. She has
who's related to Sarah Silverman?
Other Silvermans.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense.
But Allison is very funny. She wrote for Late Night in the 90s.
Right. Well, no, actually in the aughts.
In the aughts. Okay.
Yes. I think like 2002 to 2005.
Oh, cool.
And since then, she went on to work on a lot of great shows.
Yeah. Her resume, name a popular show and it's on there.
Yeah. Like a popular, cool show
critically acclaimed and also—
Exactly. Award-winning.
Publicly, mainstream acclaimed. It's all—
All the stuff
the
other TV
shows.
Writers hate.
Yes.
When she left Late Night, she went on to help create The Colbert Report. After that, Portlandia. After that, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Oh,
and most recently, I think, Russian Doll.
Wow.
It's crazy.
That's like,
yeah.
She's peaked so many times.
She's good
nothing
at—
Nothing but peaks.
She applies for— She knows what jobs to apply for.
I guess so.
Yeah.
We should ask her for career advice. And she had a nickname for you when she worked for you.
She did.
What was it?
Well, it's a part of your body.
Okay. Where excrement comes out.
Well, yeah. It's there's a sphincter in the area.
It and contracts. That was her nickname. That was her nickname for you.
That just shows what a cool boss I was.
That she got away with calling you.
She
that.
Could call me asshole. Man, I want to work for that asshole.
That is very
because you can call him
chill
asshole.
Of you.
Most assholes, you have to like call them that out of your shot.
Right. So, but she did it to your face.
I'm just saying there are levels of being an asshole. And
that is one relaxed sphincter right there.
Yes. Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you.
So
Without
further ado.
Without further ado, here's Allison.
Allison Silverman, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you. I'm excited to see you
oh
guys.
Oh my God. You have a really impressive writing resume. And I mean, I just can't believe that Late Night with Conan O'Brien is on it.
It's true. Listen, you had some poor judgment early on. Yeah. But then
that
you
was
woke
your
up.
Slump.
They're pretty amazing 4 years.
You were there. So you were there 4 years.
It was 4 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And was this was after you'd been working on The Daily Show?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. There were people on Conan that I'd seen. You know, I spent time after college in Chicago when I took classes at Second City. And so I would see people like Brian Stack and John Glazer and Kevin Dorff and Brian McCann. And they were all at Conan, and I just, adored them. I was really excited.
And did you submit a packet?
I did.
Okay. And then who hired you?
Mr. Mike Sweeney
what?
Hired me.
That's crazy. I'm sitting right here. And I don't know any of this. Yes. Yes, you were fantastic. You were hired right away.
Yeah, and I just want to know a lot. I mean,
yes.
you at that point, were you the second woman writer that there had ever been, or had there been more than that?
Janine DiTullio,
yes,
was back then, as it has been for most of the history. There's like some mono writers who just work on the monologue,
yes,
and then sketch writers. Janine was a monologue writer, and then yes, I think then Allison,
Ellie, right?
And Ellie, of course.
Oh
Ellie.
Yeah,
yes, Ellie Baranczyk, and then Allison. Yeah.
So was Ellie there when you started?
She was not.
Okay. So it was all boys.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. And when I was at The Daily Show, it was all boys too.
Yeah.
Which is strange. It feels stranger now than it did at the time.
Yeah.
Because
no,
that was
the norm at the time.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'd love to hear, maybe we'll talk about your subsequent shows you've worked on and what the makeup was.
How it's kind
I'm
of
curious
evolved.
About
yeah.
that. It's definitely, I believe, been an evolution.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. No, there's been a lot of changes. But, thank God, I had grown up just watching casts that were almost all men, if not all men, and performing in comedy groups in college that were mostly all men.
Mostly male.
Yeah. It's strange how things just don't seem as strange as they should.
Right. No, yeah. It was all accepted. And you know what? As when we'd get submissions, it skewed incredibly heavily male.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And I, at the time, didn't think, like the idea of being proactive about diversifying the room. It was almost like a male thing, like, I guess women don't like our show.
Well, that's what David Letterman said when Tina Fey pressed him on it. He said, I assumed women didn't want to write for my show.
Right. Mm.
Or why would they want to write for my show?
Right.
And it's like, well, no, they did. It was just, I mean, I think one thing I'm curious about is what made you think, I can be a comedy writer. I want to be a comedy writer. Did you have people who were either mentoring you or that you admired that you thought, okay, I can kind of model myself on them?
It may be that I never really considered myself a very successful girl. I don't know what it was. Like, I tend to skew
successful
like
girl.
I just feel like I remember at one point like someone calling me Miss or something, and as they left I thought to myself, like, how did they know I was a girl? Which is I don't know. I mean, I'm straight. I present pretty cis. So,
yeah, yeah.
So I don't know how that really happened. But I always felt like I was just a weird girl. I mean, it's great. Today, someone wrote me an email about like a set of animators for a project that I'm hoping happens. And I looked at it and I was like, we need more women on this. Bring it back when there are more women on this list. And that's something that I was really excited to be able to do and shocked that, I guess I wasn't in the position of hiring, but that it just didn't seem like
a big
it was
deal.
Incredibly obvious to me at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you spend a lot of time doing things that are mostly male, then yeah, you probably don't think that often about your gender until suddenly it becomes, oh, I have to be the temperature taker of stuff for women. So you were that on multiple staffs, it sounds like.
I was. Yeah, that's true. And I do remember that, you know, I remember that coming up more at The Daily Show because we were dealing in
politics. Yeah.
Right.
I think there were moments when that felt strange to me. And I think there were also moments where I felt like, yes, I'm ready to tell you
what womankind
believes about this.
Gather around.
Right. And I remember doing one bit there called, Vance DeGeneres was a correspondent of the show. And DJ Javerbaum and I played on how skewed the show was or how skewed news was by having a piece called Women's Health with Vance DeGeneres that had, like, and it was just all awkward and he was talking and, you know, saying all kinds of things that his delivery made clear he didn't understand, and that was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember Carell was a guest host. Jon Stewart was actually not there, and they kind of couldn't get through rehearsal because it was just so awkward to be saying all these things to each other. I kind of loved that.
Well, yeah, and I don't mean to make it all about, like, you as a trailblazer, but it is remarkable.
Oh, absolutely.
That, like, you probably didn't feel that way at the time, but sort of looking back.
Yes.
That there were just not that many women writing in late night, and it's...
And...
Yeah.
You're on a short list.
I would love to know... you don't have to share them, but I bet there were tons of times maybe where you were... felt you had to, I don't know whether you felt you had to bite your tongue about stuff going on or just pitches or.
Well, I'm just remembering this actually, which doesn't quite answer that question, which I'll get to. But like,
sure.
I remember because my mom has this picture of me framed that was from a magazine or something. And it said that year we were, as we were perennially, up for an outstanding writing Emmy. And of all the late night writers, which was probably like 60, I mean, they're big staffs,
right.
I was the only woman on that entire roster.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
really?
Incredible.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was like 2004 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With regards to, I don't remember, I mean, I think I just kind of, sometimes I just felt like, this is just such an interesting little window. I'm not going to close anything down because I never got to hear this stuff before. It was really fun. So I don't remember times where I mean, that room was just very silly, you know? I don't remember times when I felt like I was particularly offended or.
Right. Yeah. Because it's all a blur to me, you know. So, no, but seriously. And also some things, you know, there are things now that are considered like, oh my God, that would be incredibly offensive. And so going back in that time, I don't know if it seemed that way.
Right.
Right.
And you don't want to kind of create wounds that weren't there already.
Oh, come on. Let's do it. No, absolutely not.
Well, what were your first impressions of working on the show when you started? Do you remember?
I remember when I came to my interview with Mike that Glazer and Andrew Weinberg, I think, were throwing a round of football at the elevator bank.
Oh, those two jocks.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy. Right.
And I remember there being the place truly needed to be renovated. It was very, very disgusting. And there were the ceiling tiles. There was a ceiling tile that was out of place. And, like, there were empty cans up there in the ceiling space.
Oh, yeah. You would talk about how people would try to throw things up and land them there.
Yeah.
This happened a few years before you came on board. But the food was still up there. And we had a real mouse situation for a long time. We'd eat dinner after the show. And I think Tommy Blotcha... So somebody punched some tiles out in the ceiling and started throwing leftover food up there. And it became a nightly tradition for no good reason.
But that's, I think, what people expect when they hear about a comedy room.
Yes.
They imagine this just pigsty of bean bags.
It was a bit of a pigsty.
Cheeto bags.
It was gross.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I apologize to everyone. Although,
how was Sweeney as a boss back then?
Once again, we're out of time.
Uh-oh.
You can
say anything.
I'm going to step out.
What I remember is very jovial, a lot of fun, long nights, yeah. some moments of indecision.
You bet. Well, I've come a long way since then.
That's his trademark.
Yeah, I know. Right. Well, you know, it's hard to decide. It's not a precise science. It's not accounting. But I'd like
up until the deadline, and then 2 hours after that.
I would like to brag that I'm indecisive in all facets of my life.
That's
not
very
just,
decisive of you to say.
Not just comedy. No, late nights. Ugh.
Some of them. I will say, like, there was great variety. One of the things that I really made me excited about being on the show was that you got to produce your pieces. So sometimes mm-hmm. you'd be right. in the editing room or sometimes, right. I mean, there'd be amazing moments where, you know, at 10 p.m., 10:30, we would decide that we were going to do some piece and you would leave a voicemail message for Bobby Berg, who was
our set designer.
Set designer. And the next morning you would come in and there'd be a set for something
yeah.
ridiculous. I've never encountered that anyplace else. You know, I haven't been everywhere.
Right.
But it was really pretty amazing. And Jason Kirshner was an artist and set designer on it. He did amazing work.
Oh, right, right. He was great.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that late night was based on the Saturday Night Live model. So yeah. where all the writers produce their own comedy, which is great. When, mm-hmm. when things go well, you can be proud of every decision you made. For those who know how to make decisions, not me. And then, but the bad side was, if obviously, as we all know, yeah. if something doesn't go, you're just like, oh, who can I blame?
Yes.
No, there's no escape. But I think also that's why sets got built so quickly, because just kind of that SNL model of
right.
making things appear overnight, like yeah. magic.
And all the puppetry. I just remember a lot of them were very small sets that would just appear mm-hmm. and be kind right. of magical because we'd be doing stuff in stop motion or.
Didn't you, do? I hope I remember correctly. I always loved it. I think it was a satellite TV channel. It was a channel for dogs with hearing impaired dogs.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
And so you had a Labrador Retriever and you had Paw. Did you do the puppeting for that?
I think I did do the puppeting. Right. Yeah. There was a little square in the lower right.
Right.
To interpret it for.
Oh, it was sign language?
And she had the paws.
Oh,
she had the lab doing sign
that's
language.
That's really funny.
Oh, it was really funny.
It's really stupid.
I love
really
those fake yeah. animal paws.
Fake yes. animal
paws. Very soft spot in my
it
heart.
It goes back to Toonses.
It goes yeah. back to Toonses, which I showed my 4-year-old the other day. I was showing them a lot of Steve Martin, and I thought I was showing them the good stuff, and then I was like, oh, Toonses, and that was what went over huge.
Toonses, the driving, was it the Toonses, the driving cat, right?
Yes, the
that
cat who could drive
talent.
A car.
Right.
But he was terrible. I mean, he could drive, but then he would, like, go over a cliff.
Which
and
was,
then,
they're notoriously bad drivers.
Fantastic. Yeah. Yes. So that, our show also, yeah, had a history of bad. Absurd puppetry.
Intentionally bad. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
And
it still does on occasion.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Absolutely.
But you'd come from The Daily Show, so you kind of already had that anxiety of having to produce something really quickly and the deadline-oriented writing.
Yes. No, there was much more anxiety at The Daily Show because we would... this changed eventually, but we would do this thing where we would get a story in the morning and then you would go off and write your version of it with, you know, all your jokes. And then we would all sit in a room with our head writer, Ben and John, and you would just go person to person and read your version of it.
Oh, boy.
And that was scary.
That's
that was scary.
Terrifying.
Yeah, that was really scary. So with Conan, Sweeney would have a stack of papers and would not identify and
I
would read
that
it out.
I read yes. them anonymously.
I love
yes.
it.
Which sometimes I could tell. Everyone has different
styles. We always
styles.
Try to guess.
Of course. It's yeah, fun to guess. It's fun to guess.
Pitch.
But having to read yeah. your own, oh my, I would be scared every single time.
It was super scary. It was super scary. Yeah. And
I getting relaxed.
It was hard. It was yeah. hard. There were days, of course, like just like you were saying with the producing, where you just felt right. like you were a genius.
Right.
And then other days where you would. So I had, you know, because I was the only woman there, I had my own bathroom. So I would go
oh,
in the bathroom
great.
And like weep. Sometimes I would weep after one that went really badly. But, you know, also there are just definitely people who are just much better salesmen, of course, at pitching
right.
Than others.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm the best at that.
Those
anyway.
Are people without a soul.
Right. They're soulless.
How can you do that and
people.
Not be?
I know.
Freaking out.
But it's so much in the selling that
yes,
I think subpar ideas often get chosen if they're sold well.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Sometimes it means cracking up over, you know, fake cracking up over your own
pitch.
Right.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
I just, when I see that, I can't take it.
Oh, because now you know it when you see
yeah.
it.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Some people are masters at that, you know. That's, so I didn't know this. The Daily Show is the same. Similar setup where you'd produce?
No, that's not the case.
All right.
We would, this is such old, you know, version
right.
of their, how
right,
they worked.
Right, right.
When I was there, we would write our version of whatever stories we'd been assigned, and then that would be put together and produced by our head writer.
I mean, that cuts both ways. In one way, it's like, if you quibble with some of their choices, it's probably frustrating to give up your child like
right.
that to someone else. But on the other hand, if
you can always say they ruined
like,
it.
If they
yeah.
screw it up, it's not my fault.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
I want to hear more about
Take
having your own bathroom.
Yeah.
Oh.
Did men ever try to get in there, or do they
we would
like,
be
pay
crying,
you to use it?
We'd be crying together in the
yes,
men's room.
Right.
So you weren't the
communal
only one
crying.
Right. We had no. I mean,
have you
were...
ever cried at work, Sweeney? I wonder how many men on our show have cried. At
early
work.
On, when I had the head writing job, it was a giant adjustment for me. And there were nights after the show, or maybe after the act two, where act three, I'd literally walk out of the studio, walk to directly to the elevator, go down, and just walk around 30
yeah.
block and stay away for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
Your
closest I came
crying.
To crying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, I've got to go up to that fucking ninth floor again. And you know, because you had to
yeah.
do, it'd be like Tuesday and you had three more shows
oh,
to do.
Right. So. I've cried countless times at work.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I have too. I feel like I've cried in front of so many celebrities.
Oh, really?
Do tell.
Oh, my God.
Don't
that's a
hold
great,
back names.
Yeah, that's a podcast.
Yeah.
Crying in front of celebrities. Well, I mean, just because I've gotten the chance to write with them and at some point I always end up crying, which for me, like, is related to, I mean, it's toned down in the past 18 years, maybe.
Yeah.
But it always came down to, like, just, you know what Conan said to me at one point in his dressing room, he was like, you can't care so much because
oh.
I would just get so invested in things.
Right.
And I do think that one of the things about being a only woman around a bunch of men, I think that there is a tendency for men to freak out at tears when often what they're presenting is just
a release.
Passion or
yeah.
release
right.
or
yeah.
whatever.
Right.
I'm
it's the way that we release
it.
Tension that's
right.
Instead of violence.
If it's not directed toward me, I'm totally cool with people crying.
I think it's healthy, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I always feel better after a cry, and then I'm like, all right, I'm ready to go. Put me back in.
There are years I went without crying, and I felt I felt like I was depriving myself of feeling
it's
better.
Like you'd been celibate, yeah.
Yes, exactly. my tears had dried up. That's very sad.
No.
Wait, what were we talking about?
Right. I don't know. I want to hear about more about celebrities you've crushed.
Oh, yes, that's it.
Oh. I mean, let's see. I mean, I just, the
was
ones that
when
I've
you
worked
were...
for.
Oh.
Yeah, oh, I
on
just mean
things.
The ones I've worked for.
Oh,
and
okay.
and John Hodgman. Who I guess we're just friends, but whenever we have lunch, I always end up crying.
Is that true?
John brings out something in me. I don't know. Like, I just feel like every time
funny.
I'm like, all right, I'm just setting myself up to cry with John Hodgman. Because he's
very sweet.
He's a sweet guy.
Very
and
sweet.
I think I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is. Yeah, he
makes
me
women cry.
You know what? I think it's because he's always encouraging me to do my own thing, and I've never done it. I feel like he's always encouraging me to write a book, and I'm always like, I've not done it yet.
Do you feel like you're disappointing him?
Maybe that's it.
He
I don't
is
know.
A great mentor for
he
writers.
Is.
He used to run a comedy column in the New York Times, and my wife submitted one, and he was super encouraging to her.
Oh.
And helped her, encouraged her to rewrite it, and she eventually got one published, and it's the first thing fiction she ever got published.
Oh, that's great.
And she's indebted to him, loves him.
And he used to be in publishing years and
yes,
years and
yes,
years
an
ago,
editor,
right?
A book yeah. editor. Yeah. He's a
yeah,
great
he's
guy.
Wonderful.
So when he tells you to write a book, it sounds like
instead of crying, write the book.
Write the freaking book.
What are you doing? I thought you were so powerful and successful now. You hired celebrities to sit with you while you cried.
Right.
I just assumed that was it. So you recently worked on a Russian Doll.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I, man, I
very hot
gulped
show.
That
yeah.
down fat. So I'm curious about the writer's room there. What was the makeup of the writer's room there in terms of gender, since we've been talking about gender? Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, it was all women.
Oh. Oh, my God.
It was a very small writing room and all women the whole time. I say the whole time because some people came in for a few weeks and had other projects and other people would come in. But yeah, no, that was important to Natasha and Leslie, who were the showrunners there.
It's almost mind-blowing that that even can exist.
Right.
No, but that things are so different.
Yeah, well, so how do you compare? I know that's it's probably apples and oranges in terms of the shows being so different.
Yeah.
Right.
But how do you compare that atmosphere to your earlier experiences working in a crazily predominantly male writer's room?
They're so, so different.
Right.
I mean, all I would say is that gender did not really enter into it very much, maybe because it was all women. Like, we didn't really talk about gender all that
much.
When Natasha, I mean, she came in with a very clear style that she was interested in, and she immediately was like, watch The Long Goodbye by Robert Altman, directed by Robert Altman with Elliot Gould. I basically want to be Elliot Gould. So she had a male actor as her influence. And yeah, we just went for it that way, which was really fun to have her kind of have a sense of her being a gumshoe and just think of her in ways that were not defined by gender,
yeah.
of course.
Right. Can I brag for you on your behalf? I was so impressed. You created the Colbert Report with Stephen Colbert, which
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
You left Conan.
Oh.
And you're like, oh, I'm going to, you know, I'm working
on a personal project.
Yeah. right. And you created this show. I really.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been nothing like that.
Oh, no.
Before or since.
It's an all-time favorite.
Doing that show with him playing that character five nights a week. And there were nights I'd watch him, and it's as if it would seem like a Broadway play to me. Like, I couldn't believe it was written that day. And the way he performed it, I could not believe how amazing it was.
Thank you.
Yeah. So were you working on that? I mean, were you sort of concurrently working on that while you were still at Conan? Or
I was not, and I should correct Mike Sweeney. I was not a creator of it, but I did come on as head writer and immediately.
That's
so
pretty close.
But in that capacity, certainly you had a big input into forming
I think
a
that's
brand
true.
New show.
Mm. I think that's absolutely true, but I just want to be clear that I'm
right.
not a creator of it. But
okay.
But I will take that. I did. I absolutely did. I was not working on it concurrently. And, you know, I didn't really know Steve. Well, I'd seen Steven back at Second City like when I was in college back in the 90s. And then I had an office next to him at The Daily Show, but we didn't really cross paths that much. All I really remember was that he played his voicemail messages really loud. As we were like we were going up against our deadlines and preparing to go into the killing field that was that writer's room.
Pitch meeting.
I would
Were they
I
famous
would
hear people? Was he trying to impress people with his voicemails?
They were very, very, well, very nice. It was him and Steve Carell sharing an office. It's like really next door to me. It's crazy. But yeah, thank you. You know, I love Steven so much, and he was just always up for anything. And it was so exhausting to write. And I remember like early on, we had this idea that David Cross was going to come on, and he was going to be sort of the Al Franken to Colbert's Bill O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
He was his character named Russ Lieber, we had decided. And we had him, and we were, you know, in our office, and we were pitching. And then somehow he, just as he was leaving, he discovered that the show was on every night and not every week. And he just left saying, oh, well, that's impossible. You guys,
what?
You're never going to be able to do that. And then like walked out. It was too hard, but wonderful and very, you know, it gave back because it was, you just could feel how much fun it was. Right. But it felt like you were. The other thing was like you had to very quickly, you had whatever news stories or you wanted to cover and you had to figure out, okay, what's my point of view? You know, what's our point of view as the writers and as Steven? And then how do you present that in the opposite way? You
right.
know, kind
right.
of like parallel parking or something,
yeah.
Or just driving in reverse. So that was really, it was really hard. We had a great time, though. We felt like we were doing something special, which is a, you know, doesn't
you
come
were.
Around all the time.
I mean, it's, yeah, yeah, it became my favorite.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
It was great. And I remember you came by, and I always think of this as kind of a big moment, too, when he, I forget, 2006 maybe, I forget the year, Stephen was doing the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Right.
And I think you came by to say hi, and you had the script, or someone came by with it.
Mm.
And I think some of us were really interested, and we were reading it, and we just were like, wow, this, I mean, the jokes were fantastic.
Oh, did he, and he did it in character, I assume, or?
Yes,
yeah,
he
yeah.
did it in character.
Yeah.
And I think it was one of, it just got such a big reaction.
Right.
Because he really, you know, it was George W. Bush, and
he really let him have it.
Yeah, I think so much so the next year it was like Rich Little.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're
yeah.
doing Carson impressions. So,
yeah,
but you
so
were
the
there,
press,
I
was
assume,
there.
Right? So that had to be quite an experience.
And the reaction,
guessing.
I should say, the reaction was delayed. The reaction in the room was just death. It was
oh, no.
Brutal.
Really?
Brutal. Yes. And I was mostly just super proud of Stephen as a performer because he kept going when it was very hard to watch because the audience, other than Lawrence Fishburne and Jeffrey Wright, who I love, who were laughing very hard.
Okay.
Nobody else
wow.
would give anything. And the president was right there.
I don't think his performance was so, I don't think
there was a sense of that
came across
right.
when I watched it. But you were being in the room is a whole different experience.
It was so uncomfortable. It was very, very uncomfortable. I was sitting at a table with Stephen's family, and before the speech, all these celebrities, I mean, who are very strange by the way. It would be like, I remember seeing Henry Kissinger talking to Morgan Fairchild. Like, they're just the
well,
table.
That's
they make,
natural.
No, of course, of course. But they, you know, all these people would come over and talk to Stephen's family and say how much, you know, they enjoyed the show. And then after, like, people were just keeping their distance from our table and it was
oh,
so.
My God.
And then I.
Politics.
Yeah, I went to see Stephen and I didn't even know. I wasn't even sure what to say other than that I was really proud that he stuck to it.
That's so brave.
But then, yeah, right.
You looked
exactly.
like you were having fun out there.
Right. Exactly right.
Good for you.
You did it. Right.
You maintained eye contact with the audience.
That's it. Right. And then, but then C-SPAN, people started seeing it on C-SPAN and on YouTube, which was still pretty new.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then it sort of built up afterwards that there was a and it really just felt like oh gosh you know people have really been waiting for I mean the amount of enthusiasm people had then just felt like okay people have been really waiting for someone
it was
they've been waiting for yeah. this moment
I remember it in my mind being really big but
right
what was so there was a built-in delay
there was
like a day or was it
yes I think a couple
so
of days
it was almost,
yeah
so that must have been
yeah.
It was an evolving situation. And
like, are we
yeah.
going to get arrested? What's
right,
the worst
right.
case scenario?
Right.
But did yeah. you feel kind of vindicated or like?
Oh, it felt so great.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, like, there was another before, you know, they give out these scholarships too, these journalistic scholarships for high school students. And there was a cocktail party before the dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And I was speaking to this mom whose son was going to get a scholarship. And she was African-American. And I said, you must be, wow, your son's going to meet the president. And you must be so excited. She's like, no, I'm excited about this scholarship. You know, she.
Yeah.
Right.
She was rightfully skeptical.
Yeah.
And ready to say something. So, yeah, people were really ready for something like that. It was great. It was wonderful.
That's a neat experience.
I know. And then kind of it seems like since then it's really like that was maybe the dawn of what late night is now, which is just the
battle lines being drawn. Right. I mean, they were drawn earlier than that, but it just got more, and you know, it's
and where evolved. People are now playing for the larger audience of the people watching on YouTube, as opposed to just people in the room too.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
That's interesting. Those two different audiences that you mm-hmm. have whenever you have something. We went to with Colbert. We went to Iraq. We did. This was when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was still a thing, and we decided to do
it might be a thing again. I mean, we
We did a thing, you know, the whole audience were military folks, and Stephen really wanted to do a piece about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which was that was an amazing experience, because just seeing all, you know, these troops and they were laughing at how this policy was not working and made no sense. And just, it felt important to me, or cool to me, that we got to show, like, hey, listen to all these troops is laugh at this failed policy, for all the people in Congress who are saying that it would be an insult to the troops to have gay people openly serve. Mm-hmm. They're laughing at how ineffective and stupid it is. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Where were you in? Were you in Baghdad?
We were outside of Baghdad at this old palace of Saddam Hussein's.
Oh, right. How long were you there for?
Like maybe 6 days or so.
Oh, wow. You were there for a whole week.
Yeah.
Was your family freaking out?
You know what? They were okay.
Did you have a satellite phone that you were checking in with?
I think what happened, the one thing I know happened, is that my husband put Baghdad on his weather and then like went outside in like some ridiculously like a t-shirt and shorts, and it was like 60 degrees, and because it was like 105 in Baghdad,
right.
Or something.
Yeah.
Right.
I did a USO show right after the 2003, after Mission mm-hmm. Accomplished, and my wife was not happy I went over there.
Yeah.
You know, she's just like, oh, that's
right.
Seems dangerous. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It was I have to admit, it was kind of thrilling on some level, you know. Just did you enjoy that experience, or I guess you were just working the whole time?
No, I mean, it was pretty fascinating,
right?
And just sort of, you know, seeing. And by the way, the way that this place we were staying, which was like a guest house, had been an old guest house of Hussein's, mm-hmm. was decorated just like Trump's apartment. I mean,
oh,
it's all
God.
The same
yes.
aesthetic.
They have the same designer.
Guilt. A lot of gold.
Yeah.
Guilt.
Yeah,
yes.
A lot of gold guilt. I remember the guys working there, we're working in the dining hall, would feed Cocoa Puffs. There was this man-made lake that was stocked, that Hussein had stocked with fish. And they would go out and feed Cocoa Puffs to the fish. And I just remember thinking that it seemed like a proper insult to Hussein to have his fish fed Cocoa Puffs.
Western breakfast treat.
Right.
That's pretty wild.
So you worked on two important, in the larger cultural sense, shows. And then in between, you worked on Late Night.
How dare you?
No, I was that like, oh, this is kind of nice to get to write pieces with fake dog paws, not have to worry about politics as much? Or did you also feel like maybe were you writing political stuff when you were at Late Night?
I was not. I love writing stuff that's not political. I feel drained by how much political humor is out there, and I don't see as much of a alternative as I'd like. I loved the silly stuff. I always do, and I don't think that it doesn't have a point of view, you know? I think that there's importance. I don't know. Importance. I hate using the word importance in comedy. But anyway, I enjoy it. And it's important to me because it's some of the best times I've had is watching super silly stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't have that feeling. And I go back and forth. I mean, the reason why I really enjoyed The Colbert Report is that it was silly.
It was like, also it was, silly.
Yeah,
yes.
It was silly.
It was.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's, I think, what I really responded to about it, too. It didn't feel like it was too, like I was watching a speech that was always going to have the national anthem playing behind it. I mean, it
right.
literally did.
Right.
But
right.
But yeah, it sort of took the piss out of that, which was great.
So at Colbert Report, you were the head writer. What was the makeup of that writing staff in terms of gender?
Well, we started out with six writers, and
that's small for a TV show.
I should say I was a writer. As head writer, I was a writer, and so was I had a co-head writer, Rich Dom, who's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So I guess there were eight writers, of which there were two, me and Laura Kraft.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Laura. I love Laura.
Oh, God, she's hilarious. Yeah. And I definitely found what Sweeney mentioned before, like we would get submissions and they would be 95% men submitting. Mm-hmm. We then later hired Meredith Scardino, who's hilarious and wonderful. And I've seen submissions shift a lot, too. We did have two out of eight, but, you know, I wish we'd had more. Looking back, I wish that I'd pushed for more at that time. I felt like I was pushing. Anyway,
No, I mean, that's the thing. I think when you're, it's like what you were just saying about the cartoon situation. It takes a while to get to the point where you feel like you have the clout to push back.
Hey, what's going on here?
Yeah, or like, well, it's going to take two extra months, but we're gonna do this work because it's harder to be more inclusive.
Right.
That it's not the easier option.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and I wish that I just sort of decided that I had that clout earlier. But again, like I did push, and I also didn't quite. I was sort of in a situation that existed, you know, like I definitely see it now, you know, that it's evolved. I should have said, let's go get more submissions. That's what I think. Yeah.
Well, yeah. But it's like you're swimming upstream and it's a very strong current. I mean,
but it has been really, I could be wrong. People might not agree, but just you saying, you know, like Russian Doll was all women.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems like a pretty dramatic evolution.
Yeah,
it's really dramatic.
A world where a network would be like, "Wait, are we sure? We should get a man in there to make sure they know how to type."
Right.
You know.
Right.
I mean,
you know where it is now. It's better than.
It's so much better. Obviously. No, I really think that it's been a sea change for sure. That happened somewhere in there, and I hope that I was part of it. I think I was.
I think so.
And it's the acceleration.
Seeing that. Oh, it's a job that I'm allowed to have. That makes a big deal.
Jesse, do you laugh at do you laugh at all the writers, the male writers trying to be woke around? I feel like they're always trying to outwoke each other.
Well, it is funny to me because that I do sort of feel like liberal men are kind of the worst in a way because they always think that they are right about everything and are not really still aren't listening, though.
Well, that would mean all liberal and all conservative men are terrible.
I think it's just that's who I'm around the most.
No, right, of course.
It is funny to see, like, because being woke is sort of trendy now.
Yes.
That's like
right.
That's people want a gold star for that.
Right.
Yeah,
I know.
I had a friend who was part of a design group. And they were looking to bring in, he's a white guy, and they're looking to bring in more people of color, more women, more diversity, clearly. And he just felt like he was sure about the methods they should use to get those more people. And he was encountering resistance because the people who are already in the group or were not white and not men felt like they should maybe have more say or might have more knowledge about how to get more of them. But he felt like he was the one who had the answer to how to recruit more people. It was a kind of classic situation.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, I think we're also, like, one thing that we've been discussing the last few years is that we weren't as far along as people maybe thought we were. Like, I think there was this impression that, a lot of men were thinking, well, I'm not sexist or racist, so therefore there's not, that stuff doesn't exist.
All fixed.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
Fixed.
We're in a post-sexism and post-racism world.
Thank you.
And now it can just be based on merit. But it's like, well, we weren't there.
No.
We weren't as far as we thought.
Right.
And so that's kind of been the acknowledging that process that has to happen. And then it's, okay, so we're not there. Therefore, now we need to maybe give, like you were saying, we need to find new ways to recruit that aren't just tell your friends that we're hiring because that's going to mean more white people or, you know.
There's an opening on our show now, and I, I know Matt O'Brien, our head writer, got
600.
But the ratio is of much women higher. Is way up.
Oh,
so
that's great.
That seems like a nice natural evolution.
Yeah, I mean,
without
I,
having to get out there. You know?
Yeah.
Obviously, you could still do stuff like that, but
right.
not maybe it's not. Such
well,
a
maybe
drastic...
some of us did do that.
Get out of here! You've taken the blunders. You know. Listen, I don't mean this in a pandering way, but I will say men are terrible. I just want to get that. Not
when
pandering
I
at all.
Was starting in this, I,
Sweeney's so uncomfortable.
He's so uncomfortable.
I've never been more relaxed. I grew up with women. Seriously, I love.
No,
this.
It's true. No.
You.
Mike
I know
Sweeney
about the women
one of the good
up.
Ones.
Guys,
okay.
Please. Oh, right. One in particular.
Right.
Had some issues.
I remember, like I'm sure many listeners will do, like hundreds of articles with the headline "Are Women Funny?"
Oh yeah,
there were constant "Are Women Funny?" headlines.
Christopher Hitchens wrote about
right?
it.
Right? Oh, for sure, Hitchens. It was like that was
Jerry Lewis.
Yeah,
my go-to guy for
a good
for those matters.
10 years worth of conversation that I feel like I'm not seeing anymore. Thank God. I feel like that's been settled.
What was that
it's
like?
It's on the dark
like,
web would, now.
Oh, right. Incels.
That would that would infuriate. Or were you just like, ay, ay, ay. What
I think well, that you, inter- I think especially, well, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't want to speak for you, but I internalize that stuff. I don't think, it doesn't, it probably makes me angry, but it also makes me think, well, I don't know. I mean, this many people wonder that.
This
and they're
many
getting
men
published.
Can't be wrong.
Yeah. So if the New York Times is publishing it, maybe they've got a point.
Right.
I don't know.
I think a lot of times it would be used because everyone wanted to see great people like Tina and Amy and stuff. So they would be like, how do we get Tina and Amy in? Oh, we'll have it be a story of Are Women Funny? Like, oh, thanks a lot, guys, everyone. Why not just a great story on Tina and Amy?
Right.
You know? Right. Yeah. You did work with Tina Fey.
Yeah.
Yeah. On... Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Yes.
And Ellie Kemper, who used to...
Ellie Kemper.
Also a Conan connection.
Did all you, these internships.
You,
I feel like there should be a documentary on late night interns because there is such... I mean, Mindy Kaling and John Krasinski and Ellie Kemper. Yeah. I there are many more, I believe. Yes.
Did you,
it's
interesting. Did you know did you use Ellie in sketches and stuff at late night?
I did not. You know, I think she...
I
we were not. We did not overlap.
Intern.
I think I did use her at Colbert Report. We hired her, and then I worked with her at The Office as well.
Oh yeah, you worked in The Office. Oh my god,
Man!
So name of
you have the
hit
best
show.
Resume.
I know.
Portlandia.
Oh my god, that's right.
You've got some nerve.
You know, it's like you know, no failed projects that no projects that didn't get to air make it on resume.
Well, I was telling Sweeney earlier that you make a really good case for leaving a job. You know, like you don't want to stay somewhere too long because then you kind of keep some momentum. Do you feel like that was intentional?
You don't want to end up like me.
Oh, no. Well, I feel like I think about that all the time because obviously I gave up some stability because a late night job can be the closest that there is to like... tenure, you know, like you've got a steady income, you're going to be around, hopefully. And now I have kids, you know, at the time, you know, so now I really want that steady income. But I guess I just wanted to, I think there's a couple things. One, I have been very, very slowly working myself up to writing a long script. It's just taking me more than 20 years. I started at The Daily Show just writing jokes, and then I went to Conan. And then, so it really is getting comfortable with longer forms.
More than 12 pages,
yeah. Because I'm so, I can be very OCD about that. But I think it's, also, it's been a lot of fun to get sort of the diversity of that and to feel like I'm based in New York and now I feel like, okay, I know how to do episodic. I know how to do late night. And that puts me in the position to get more jobs, hopefully, and stuff.
Yeah,
but
you know more people. I mean, so much about that, too.
Yeah.
How have you, what has been sort of your process for talking yourself into taking some of these risks? I mean, how do you...
Right.
look at opportunities.
I think I don't know. I guess I have somewhat of a good tolerance for it. I really kind of just look for things that seem really interesting to me. I always feel that, like, I think a lot of times people underestimate what viewers will go for. I think that viewers really like you to take a strong, I don't have any sports metaphors, a strong swing, a big swing.
That's perfect. That's really great. That's right on the money.
Right. I think that they appreciate big swings much more than a lot of times they get credit for. So I really am drawn to things that have a really strong point of view and are and places where I get the job.
I'll bring it up now. You have a nickname for me.
I don't
remember the genesis of it.
I think it was that you were a raving asshole.
Right.
No,
and then you shortened it to just asshole. Just,
raving asshole is long.
I really love that is your nickname for me, but I don't remember.
Would you say that to his face?
You know what? I think it probably, it's so not clever that I feel embarrassed.
Oh, like let's not talk about it then.
But no, I think that I just, maybe it was.
I mean, obviously I just very ironic.
So ironic.
Yeah.
I just didn't enjoyed the idea that I could call a boss asshole to his face and get away with it. And you were so.
And no true asshole would let you.
It's true. I mean, I guess
I was
just
clearly used to being called that because I was like, yeah, you found out.
I think that was. I think, you know, there was things where you're like, I can't believe I can't believe I get to have this job. Like when you would, you know, I remember doing some. Gene Wilder was on the show and we were doing something about Young Frankenstein and I had some bit where we had like 15 different people dressed up as Frankenstein and people were asking me, some of them were eating, some of them were like, they all had different things that they were doing. And I remember someone asking me like, how many of the Frankensteins are eating Chinese food? And you just have this like, it's just so crazy and that you can, that I could do it, that I would be allowed to do it. And it just sort of hits your neurons in a specific way, and I think it's along the lines of that. Like, somehow I looked into a job where I'm allowed to call my boss asshole,
and have Frankenstein
kind of encouraged.
Use chopsticks.
Right.
Well, the highlight for me was going to your wedding. It's one of my prized possessions.
You invited a boss you thought was an asshole to your wedding.
Yeah, isn't that?
He was no longer
closer.
My boss.
Oh, I see.
That's right.
Right.
That
yeah,
helps.
we're just friends. and, you know, you go to the table to look for your name. And I was like, you know, I'm looking at the S's. I don't see Sweeney. And it turns out I was in the A's. It was just, there was a card that said just said asshole.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
It was great. I love it. I still
and
have,
then was and it in, Mrs. Asshole for Cynthia?
I can't remember. No, I'm sure
I
she
think
got
we
a
did
name.
Cynthia. But
and in beautiful calligraphy.
Yes.
It was great.
A lot of people asked me about that afterwards.
Oh, right.
Family like, members confused.
Who's the asshole?
Right.
I'm amazed you didn't have more than one asshole at your wedding. Because most
only
people
one was
have more
out.
Than one.
Right. Oh, and there's one thing I was remembering coming
yes.
up here. I just remember, I think, remember earlier I was saying, I think I said this. Did I say about, oh, right, yeah, the crying and the caring too much? Okay,
yeah.
This was not a crying. This is the other side of the coin. I remember John McCain being on the show, and he was doing Secrets, which was a wonderful bit where, yeah, someone would be interrogated, you know, behind a table and, you know, with the cigarette perhaps and the big, you know, spotlight on them, and they would give up their secrets and we would write funny stuff for them. And I got to be, even though all the writers contributed to this, I got to be sort of the producer on this one with John McCain. And I spoke to him beforehand and he was, you know, we had a big list of jokes and he would check the ones that he liked and he had really good taste. And then we started shooting it and I just kept thinking that he wasn't getting the lines just right. I kept pushing
him,
him, and we just started doing way too many takes for a sitting senator and someone coming down and being and advising me that I had to stop
oh boy.
Torturing the senator.
Was he cool
That's
about
really
it?
Funny. He just... I'm sorry to use the word torture there. No, I am. He was going with it, but it was just, you know, I mean, you can't.
He's not an actor.
He's not an actor.
No,
right, but I was just like, I couldn't let it go. I just kept pushing and pushing and pushing this poor man who had agreed to give us his time.
It was your apocalypse
now.
I'm glad
you got that off your chest.
Wow. Well, Allison, thank you so much for taking time out.
Thank you.
Sit with
this
us.
This is great.
I hope your whatever your next project is.
It's going to be
It's going to be the next. It's going to be the next biggest show that's on television. So look for that.
TBD.
Thanks, guys.
No pressure. Thanks, Allison. Okay, well, that was really cool for me. I mean, I think you could tell that I was excited to meet another.
I'm glad you guys got to meet.
Woman writer.
Yeah.
No, you too. She's amazing.
You're fast friends. And I'm still asshole to her, so that's important.
No, but you two have, there's a camaraderie there that.
She's fantastic. I'm always excited to see her. Yeah. And get called asshole again.
And get called asshole. You don't get enough of that at home.
When the kids are home, I do.
We're back in the office next week.
Right.
And we are going to have a behind-the-scenes episode.
That is our plan.
Where who knows what's going to happen. It's going to be a hustling, bustling office again.
Right.
Which full I'm looking forward to.
Full of low-grade drama. But we'll try to amp it up.
Yeah, we'll add some sound effects.
Yeah, it'll be impressive. Now, behind the scenes next week.
So, yeah.
The latest.
We'll hope to see you all. I'll not see you. Oh, my God. Such an idiot.
Please. Jesse. Jesse.
Why did I say that?
You're an idiot. So those are our new names. You're an idiot. I'm asshole.
Okay. Well. This is idiot signing off.
And this is asshole until next week.
We'll see you next week. We like you. Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Kevin Bartelt.
Engineered by Will Becton.
Mixed by Ryan Connor.
Supervising producer is Aaron Blaird.
Associate producer, Jen Sample. Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
Ta-da!
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at a coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at tmobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at tmobile.com.